Welcome to the High on Life podcast, where it's all about empowering you with the medicine and the mindset to healthfully lose weight and thrive beyond the scale. I'm your host, Dr. Sasha High. This podcast contains general educational information on weight loss and beyond. Remember that while I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. So be sure to seek medical support from a qualified health professional. Hello, my friends. Welcome back. I am super excited because I had such a big weekend that I want to share with you today. Saturday, I spoke at the Obesity Matters, Your Health Matters Health Summit. Okay, that was a big mouthful. The summit was called Your Health Matters. The group that put it on is called Obesity Matters, and I was one of the speakers. I gave a masterclass on really empowering your mindset when it comes to your health behaviors. I had so much fun. It was really great to do like a live talk in front of a really fun audience. Got to do some live coaching as well, which was amazing. And that got me really pumped up. I was a little stressed out about it because it was like the day before my marathon. At first I was like, oh, like bad timing, not a great plan of mine to, you know, say yes to speaking at this event the day before, but I left there and I was just like, what a great crowd. It was so great to connect with people. I saw some of my old clients and patients there and they came up and said hi. So yeah, it was all around great. I came home feeling pumped, ready to carb load for the day before my marathon. And Sunday, April 28th, I ran my very first marathon. So for those of you who are like, oh, a marathon, is that a 10K? No, a marathon is 42.2 kilometers by definition. That's what a marathon is. And, had so much fun over the past many months training for it and then going to the event with some of my friends, my running crew, and I just had a blast and I'm in so much pain now. I'm recording this day two after the race and I'm hobbling around and my legs aren't really working, but I had the best time, finished with a huge smile on my face. Like I just felt like I smiled the whole time, which was really, really cool. And it's been a lot of months of training, and through all of it, I feel like I've grown so much, I've learned so much, and that's really what I wanted to share with you today. I wanted to share with you some of the lessons that I learned since training for my very first marathon. And just to give you a bit of context, for those of you who have been listening, you've heard me chat about this a little bit, but I decided basically in November that I was going to do this. Prior to November, the idea of running a marathon was not even on my radar because I had told myself like, my body doesn't do that. I can't actually run that distance. I always get injured. I used to run half marathons and I would get injured. And I was like, no, my body's just like not cut out for that. I can't do that distance. Really, that was a belief of mine. I didn't even like consider questioning whether that was true. I just really believed it. And then I joined this running crew and a bunch of them are doing, you know, marathon distance, they're doing triathlon. And so it kind of became like, oh, that's interesting. Like if they can do it, like why do I keep disqualifying myself and telling myself I can't? And so I just decided, you know what, this is something I'm going to just do. I'm just going to do it, right? Like I think I can't, but I've just decided I can. And that was November, signed up for the Mississauga Marathon, signed up with a coach and a plan and just did it, really. That's what it came down to. Put in the hours to start training for it and just finished the goal and learned so much through that. So let me share with you the lessons, and I'm hoping that this is inspiring to you. I'm hoping that you are able to gain something from the lessons that I have learned as well. So the very first lesson that I learned is that discipline is cultivated through discomfort. Now, I think I hear from a lot of people, because, you know, in my field, in weight management, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, my big struggle is that I'm just not motivated. I need help with the motivation. And I actually think that we would be better off talking about discipline than we are talking about motivation. Here's the difference. Motivation is like this initial burst of inspiration. Like you get excited about a goal. Like motivation is like week one after you sign up for the marathon. You're like, yeah, like I'm going to run this marathon. Yeah. And that goes like after about a week, right? And then you're like, oh gosh, now the hard work sets in, months of training. And that's what happens. Like people set out to lose weight or, you know, whatever your big goal is, apply this to your circumstance. Okay. The motivation fizzles really, really quickly because the novelty fades, right? And the excitement of the initial goal fades really quickly. And then you have to face like, oh, this is actually really hard. There's setbacks you have to overcome, challenges you have to face, right? And so what you need to be able to actually build, rather than relying on motivation, you have to build discipline. So what's discipline? Well, Stephen Covey defines it as the ability to make and keep promises and to honor commitments. Discipline is what helps us do the things even when we don't feel like it because of the long-term gain, right? When we would rather be doing something else, that's discipline. And discipline is really focused on the commitment that you've made to that future version of you. And it's something that can be practiced, right? It's a choice to continually show up and take action and do those things that move you towards your personal goals, even when you don't feel motivated to do it in the moment. Like, motivation becomes irrelevant. It's not about feeling motivated or feeling like pumped up to do it and energized to do it. It's about making the commitment to yourself that you're going to show up for yourself. And so I just think that, you know, it would serve us all so well to focus on, how do I become a person who cultivates discipline in my life, as opposed to, oh, I need to find motivation. Like, I need to continually have this emotion, this of feeling like hyped about it, right? Because we don't always feel hyped about our goals, but we still have to do, like, take the actions to do them. And a big part of that is we have to keep our focus on the future version of ourselves, of who we are becoming and who we want to be. And I think, you know, I've thought about, like, how do we cultivate that? And I said, I'm going to start talk about cultivating it through discomfort. I think for some people, discipline does come more naturally. And I will admit, I'm probably one of those people. I have been disciplined since I was young. But also, my parents gave me a lot of opportunity, or like forced me, shall we say. We'll call it opportunity. You know, at the time, it didn't feel like that. But they gave me opportunity to practice that. So I think about, you know, I played piano when I was young at a very high level. I think about any child who's enrolled in, you know, a higher level of sports or music that requires them to do drills, right? Like, when you're practicing an instrument, you're practicing piano, you have to do scales and arpeggios. There's nothing fun or rewarding about doing scales. Zero, right? The only benefit is that it develops discipline. And that discipline is a gift to your future self. And I'm trying to teach that to my kids right now. It's like, doing things we don't feel like for the sole purpose of making ourselves stronger. And my six-year-old hasn't quite gotten that yet. He's like, no thanks. I don't think I want to sign up for that, right? But we're getting there. We're moving that forward slowly. And there's a sense of, like, satisfaction that comes from discipline as well. Like, there is a sense of pride when we are in self-evaluation. There's a certain amount of pride that you can take when you have worked on discipline. I was talking to a patient of mine a little while back, and she was saying how, you know, she's like, I really just always choose the easy road. And right now that means I eat my kids' leftovers and I just grab fast food. And we had a conversation about this. I was like, yeah, that's okay. Because this is just a skill set that you can practice, building discipline to do things for yourself because of the future version of you that you're trying to honor. It's a practice, right? And so what I suggested to her is, like, I want you to try to do every single day, practice doing something that you don't feel like doing, but that is in line with your values. So whether that, you know, what that might be, like, it can be as simple as it's 10 o'clock at night and you really want to scroll on Instagram, but you've made a commitment to yourself, like, that you really honor your tomorrow version of you enough that you need to just go to bed and you shut off Instagram. That little tiny step is an act of self-discipline, right? It's an act of, yeah, I might feel like just doom scrolling for the next hour, but tomorrow I'm going to pay for it. And I love tomorrow's version of me enough that I'm not going to do that, right? It could be as simple as, like, you're brushing your teeth and you do 20 squats before you go to bed. Like, that is you fostering and cultivating discipline. And a big part of this cultivating discipline is learning to embrace the discomfort that goes along with that. So when you do things that you don't feel like doing in the moment, it is uncomfortable, right? It's not fun. There's no part of you that's like, woohoo! You're doing it because you're going to reap the benefit in the future. But in that very moment, it is uncomfortable. And it goes against our very kind of nature. Our nature is to seek pleasure, avoid discomfort, and do the easy route. Like, really, that's how we're biologically wired. So if you're trying to practice discipline, you have to be ready for that. Just like acknowledge that the feelings of discomfort, the feelings of hard are a normal part of the process. So for example, with running, like I love running, I really do. But that does not mean that every time I stepped out the door to go for a run, I was like hyped to do it, right? When I was running in the rain, in the snow, in the blowing winter winds, like I live by the lake, it's very windy in the winter. I often didn't feel like it. I often didn't even enjoy it in those moments. But what I can say is I actually really enjoyed the discipline of it, because there's so much like pride in that, right? There's so much of a sense of like, I showed up for me. I did this really hard thing, right? You come back from running in a snowstorm and you're like, I did hard, right? I did this uncomfortable thing and I'm better for it. And there's such, you know, this confidence boost that comes from it, right? The other thing that I did, and I thought about this as I was doing it, I was like, I did this specifically to train myself to be uncomfortable, is I ran in my training. I'd never run with ear pods. I don't listen to music. I don't listen to podcasts. I literally just go out and run and I listen to my heartbeat. I listen to my breathing. I listen for my cadence. I notice how my body feels. I feel every part of the uncomfortable. And I knew it was making me stronger. And even on the hard, like on the hard workout days, when, you know, workouts in running are doing things like you're doing sprints or you're doing a faster pace for certain chunks of time or for certain distances, or maybe you're doing hills, things like that. There is nothing pleasant about the physical fatigue of like the gasping for air at the end of your sprint, but there's everything pleasant about the satisfaction of hard work. And for those of us who are like dopamine seeking, which by the way is all of our brains, we're all kind of liking that dopamine. It's the thing that motivates ongoing behavior. And for so many of us, we're only getting dopamine from food. There's very little else that you're finding satisfaction in that, you know, and I see this a lot. A lot of us are not finding satisfaction in other things in our lives. And so food is the only satisfaction. So like, talk about taking that away. It's like, oh my gosh, I've got nothing left. Like, can't take this food away. What have I got if I don't have the food giving me constant pleasure? Well, this is the type of stuff that actually gives true pleasure, the type of pleasure that doesn't come with a price tag. It only comes with benefit, and it's real, right? The same thing with like people who spend their lives video gaming and just getting caught up, or like getting caught up in social media. That gives you a false amount of dopamine, but like this kind of stuff, the satisfaction of discipline and the satisfaction of hard work, that's real dopamine. That's dopamine that like you can teach your brain to really seek after, and doesn't come with a cost, doesn't come with consequences, right? Anyway, coming back to, you know, embracing that discomfort that produces the discipline in you, one of the things I reminded myself as I was going through my running, I'd literally be running and I had this mantra and I said, stronger with every step. And it was just to remind me, like, stronger with every step that I am putting in right now that is difficult and hard is making me stronger, right? And then through that is going to lead me into my second kind of point, which is that the process of the training, the putting in the workouts, the dialing in my nutrition, the hydration, the fueling, all of it, the process is what became the goal. It wasn't about race day, right? Race day, signing up for a race, like signing up for the marathon, it was just like an excuse to do all of this work, right? It's one day. But you know what the marathon actually was? The marathon was the months of training, of hard work, of showing up for myself, of racking up mileage all by myself that no one else saw, right? Like maybe my training partner, Jody, she was with me through a lot of it, but for the most part, there's like no glory in the work, right? No one's there on the sidelines cheering you on, being like, yeah, amazing. Like, sure, that happens on race day. That doesn't happen for the months of training ahead of time. That's just you. It's you showing up, doing it when you don't feel like it. And I think that's like an amazing thing. For me, the process of the training is what I loved. Like the marathon was cool, But if you had asked me even before the marathon, I would have been like, I have loved marathon training. Like the marathon training part was the part that I really liked because the process for me became the reward. And if you can do that with your goals, then you're not waiting for the outcome. You're not waiting for an end point to give you the satisfaction. You're just becoming the person who finds so much satisfaction in the process of becoming. And I think that's really powerful. Right. So for those of you who, you know, want to put this in the context of weight loss, how can you make the process of doing the health behaviors, right? How can you make that the goal and not the outcome of the scale as the only goal? If you could enjoy the process of like making great food choices for yourself, healing your relationship with food, learning how to build strength or fitness or manage stress or manage emotions, like whatever it is you're working on in your health journey, if you could see that as the goal, like the process of doing those things as the goal, how much would that change your experience to joy and pride and self-confidence instead of, you know, the journey being like this punishing, painful experience where, you know, I have to do all of these things and I'm super deprived and restricted because I'm trying to achieve a certain body size or a certain number on the scale, right? Like it's so different. And there's so much joy if you can learn that the process is the goal. So that's point number two. Number three is setbacks are part of the journey, right? And I talk to my patients and my clients a lot about this, that if you're setting a goal, you have to anticipate that setbacks are bound to happen because that's life. And that's the problem so often is we expect things to go perfectly. And so when we're thrown a curveball, we like don't know what to do. And then so many people give up at that point, right? So what if setbacks are just a part of the journey? How do you pivot? And that's like such a key word, I think, is pivoting. So about a month into my marathon training block, so this was in January, I developed severe pain in my right forefoot. And I was convinced I had a stress fracture. I had a stress fracture about 10 years ago in my foot from running that I needed to be in an air boot for, like for 6 weeks. Anyway, so I dealt with one in the past, so I kind of knew what, you know, what it felt like. And so I decided in that moment, I was like, I am not going to let this stop me from my goal. I have enough time between January and April that if I rehab this properly, if I'm really smart about it, I can still make the race, right? But it did require me to pivot. So I didn't give up at that point. Instead, for 3 weeks, I just hit the pool. I stopped running. I switched all my workouts to swim workouts to take the pressure off my foot. I went to physio. I did my strengthening, all of that stuff. Ended up getting an MRI and was able to kind of rehab myself back to it. And it wasn't a fracture in the end. It was probably just a stress injury with a little bit of... Anyway, not that you need to know my medical stuff. The good news was I was able to get back to running after about 3 weeks, and then things went really well until 3 weeks right before the marathon. And after my longest training run, my left IT band flared up. And this is another recurrent injury I had when I previously ran. And I knew that if I let this like get out of hand and if I kept pushing myself, it could take me out for months because that's what happened previously. So I decreased my run volume like literally 3 weeks before the race, right? So my mind was freaking out at this point, like, oh my goodness, I've trained so hard for this. What's going to happen? I decided to work only on strengthening my muscular deficiencies. So like my glute med, I knew was weak. So I really just worked on that, doing strength training twice a day, like probably overdid it. I focused on my mental strength as well. I did a lot of like preparation on my mental strength and my mental resilience when I couldn't work on the physical. Listened to all these podcasts about sports psychology. So my point is I found ways to pivot. Right? Because setbacks are bound to happen in whatever goal you're going to face, whatever you're going through in your life, you're going to come up against setbacks. You have to find a way to keep going, right? Don't take the setback as a reason to quit. Just take it as like a normal part of the journey and pivot your plan and keep going, even though it will look different from what you expect. And that requires like a certain flexible mindset and a certain amount of like ownership to say, hey, I can find a solution here. What's it going to look like? And that leads me, nice segue, into point number four, which is the idea of taking extreme ownership. Now, I totally borrowed that phrase from Jocko Willink, I believe, or maybe it's extreme. Yeah, extreme ownership, I think, is from Jocko Willink. But it's this idea that like if you don't own the problem or the challenge or the goal, like you don't own it yourself. If you make it someone else's problem or someone else's fault that you're where you are, like you won't find the solution because you'll be in victim mindset. You'll be in this place of like blaming your circumstances or everyone around you. And you just like that will keep you trapped, right? And I think like the one thing that when I see victim mindset in my patients, it's like such a red flag because it keeps you paralyzed. It keeps you in this place of like not wanting to own the solutions of how you can move forward. And ultimately at the end of the day, you're the only person who can move yourself forward, right? And that's really what it is with running too, is no one can run for you, right? When I arrived at race day, no one could have done the training for me. No one showed up and did those workouts for me. Like it was on me. I had to do that. And sometimes what I see is like, you know, people blame their circumstances or they expect like, it's my coach's job to get me there. It's my boss's job to give me opportunities in the workplace. It's my husband's job to support me and have healthy foods in the house. It's my meal plan's job to like give me the right calorie count. You know, if it's someone else's job, it's just not going to happen, right? So there's just like this, there's so much power in just owning, taking responsibility. I'm not talking about blame. So get blame, like get that word out of your mind, right? Like there's no benefit to blame. So I'm really just talking about owning and taking responsibility so that you can be the one who owns the solutions as well. And that sense of taking responsibility ties into building discipline, right? Taking responsibility for developing yourself into the person that you want to be. And that ties into how you can support yourself through that, which is point number five, personal mantras or your self-talk. I actually really dislike the word mantras. I've said it twice now. I don't love that word. I don't know why. It sounds like too woo-woo to me, but it's essentially your self-talk. How do you talk to yourself? What do you believe about yourself? This very much ties into your identity, which I have talked a lot about. I've done a podcast on identity. Identity is your collection of thoughts you have about yourself. And your collection of thoughts is your self-talk, right? Because your thoughts are just the things that you're repeating back to yourself. That's the thing that's on like what's on replay in your mind. And so be really careful to notice how you talk to yourself. Be sure that it's rooted in love and compassion. And all of us have an inner critic. So if you have an inner critic and she's really mean to you, you're not broken. That's actually just how brains work. Okay. Brains have a negativity bias, sort of for whatever reason, how things are. But just recognize that you have a choice in the matter. Okay. So just because thoughts pop into your mind doesn't make them true, doesn't make them helpful. We don't have to argue with them, but we can choose to displace them by focusing on more empowering self-talk, right? So many women that I talk to think that like, if I just take out this beating stick and I beat myself up enough about my behavior and I, you know, it's the shame-based approach, really. If I just do that enough, I'll change. It doesn't ever work because the shame-based approach, the beating stick, it demotivates you, it disempowers you, right? And so you don't show up as your best when you're speaking to yourself in a mean way, when you're telling yourself you're, you know, a terrible person for overeating or binging, like whatever that self-talk is, never works. It needs to, like, we have to start noticing our self-talk and speaking to ourselves like a really, really encouraging friend. So I had a number of empowering beliefs that I reminded myself through my training. And then I actually wrote certain ones down for my marathon to remind myself during the marathon. So during my training, I mentioned one earlier, it was stronger with every step. So I'm opening my journal because I wrote them down here. So it was stronger with every step. Another one I really liked, it's kind of funny. I'd be running and I'd say, my legs obey my mind. I don't know why I liked that one, but it worked for me. I was like, no, my legs obey my mind. If my mind says I keep going, my legs are going to keep going. I used that through the marathon at like, I don't know, kilometer like 36. Because once I passed kilometer 30, I'd never run 42 kilometers before. So if you've never trained for a marathon, you never actually run the full distance until race day. So you don't even know if it's possible. Like you literally go into race day with this huge unknown factor of like, I don't know if I can finish this. I've never done it before. But you just have to trust that you've like trained for it. So around kilometer 36, I was in unknown territory, right? Never ran that distance in my life before. And I just reminded myself, like, if I believe I can do it, I will do it. And so my legs obey my mind. And I knew I could not stop. Like I didn't walk once during the marathon because I knew if I stopped, my legs were not going to start up again. Like I could feel them seizing up. So I just kept reminding myself, my legs obey my mind. And let me tell you some of my other ones. I've Got My Own Back. I really like that as well. Stronger With Every Step, I mentioned. This Is What I'm Training For. That was another one. It's kind of this sense of like, I chose this, right? I'm doing this for me and it's not for anyone else. Like I'm literally showing up and doing this hard thing for me. I've chosen this. I'm training for this. And I do hard things. I switched it from I can do hard things because I thought it was more powerful to me to say I do hard things, like actively. It's like a proactive stance. I do hard things. Then for the actual race day, I spent a lot of time preparing, like, what am I going to remind myself when it's hard? And I was listening to all these podcasts, as I mentioned, on sports psychology. And one of the things that was like so helpful for me is they said, you have to expect that it's going to be painful, right? It's going to hurt. You're literally signing up for that. And you're signing up to see how you handle it when it starts to hurt. That's like the gift that you're giving yourself of seeing what's possible. And so, some of the things I reminded myself is when it hurts, keep going. And nothing has gone wrong here, right? Like just remembering like the discomfort is actually not a sign that anything has gone wrong. The discomfort is the part of the process. That's the growth process. And I just offer you that as well for, you know, take that into whatever context you're kind of thinking of for yourself. The discomfort is the process. There's nothing that's gone wrong. If it's hard for you, if you're facing difficulty, if it's really uncomfortable, that is actually the process. You're right where you're supposed to be. That's the growth. That's the beauty. So keep going. It's supposed to feel uncomfortable. And then I also reminded myself, I want to show myself what I can do. And then I had one from Isaiah 40, verse 31 from the Bible. And it was, I will run and I will not grow weary. And I just kept on reminding myself of these things. And, you know, for you, I just wonder, are there some phrases that you can carry through your life that you can remind yourself that you believe when you're facing difficulty, when you're facing hardship, that you believe about yourself? Because shifting how you talk to yourself is really just a practice. If you need to shift from that inner critic, it's just a matter of practicing some new thoughts, displacing the old with the new, because you're giving more airtime to the ones that you've chosen to believe rather than the ones that your brain just kind of autopilot throws at you, right? So you can make a decision to start practicing that. And it's really just about speaking to yourself like an encouraging friend. And my last lesson is that community is powerful. I shared on another episode about the running crew that I joined. And I mentioned that at the beginning too, like it really was in joining this running crew that I started to believe that it was even possible. And at kilometer 32, our coach who kind of put this running community together, she's amazing, her name's Kelly. She had set up this whole like cheering station with bouncy castles for the kids and they were handing out water. And it was like right at this hill, pretty steep hill. And she was at the bottom of the hill. She met me at the bottom. She handed me a bottle of electrolyte drink and she ran up the hill with me. And she just told me like, you got this, you can keep going. Just keep on going right up this hill. You don't stop. And she just ran me up the hill and it just gave me enough of that boost for me to keep going. Cause I had developed a stitch at that point, took the electrolytes, my stitch went away miraculously. And I was able to kind of finish beyond that. And I was really grateful for that. And so many of the other, you know, the other amazing women in my inner circle and my husband and like everyone who's been so supportive. And as I was preparing for this podcast, I found a quote that I saw this somewhere. I have this quote from a guy named Nipsey Hussle. And I didn't even know who this guy was. Apparently he was a rapper, unfortunately passed away. But this is the quote. If you look at the people in your circle and you don't get inspired, then you don't have a circle, you have a cage. It's a little bit of like a woof, like it's like a firm, firm kind of quote, but I thought it was really powerful, right? Like you should look around at the people around you and you should feel inspired because that's how you kind of like you fly and you grow. And, you know, in my life, I consider the different women and I have different women who inspire me in so many different ways, right? Some of the women in my life, they inspire me because of their faith and their values, their love for Christ, their motherhood. Some inspire me for their athleticism, their perseverance, their ambition, determination. It's so varied. And I'm really thankful for that, right? Because I get to be inspired in so many different ways. And I think that's amazing. I will also say that's what I love about Best Weight and my community inside Best Weight is it's women supporting one another and creating a safe space and inspiring each other. I just had someone email us recently, and she's just been away for a couple months. She's like, I so miss the women. I need to come back because I miss like having this community to share it with. Right. And so many of the women in Best Weight were also rooting for me for this race. So thank you to those of you who were rooting for me, who sent me messages. It's truly, truly appreciated. And I hope for all of you listening that you have that too, that you have a community that inspires you, that surrounds you with like so much love, so much belief in what you're able to do. So yeah, I hope this was helpful. Just to summarize, we talked about cultivating discipline through discomfort and embracing that discomfort, that we can make the process the goal rather than the outcome, that setbacks are a normal part of the journey. Doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. It's learning to pivot, that you can take extreme ownership of your goals and your life and be the person to, you know, to craft the future version of you with so much love and so much intention. We talked about the importance of our self-talk and how we can reframe that. And then the fact that community is really, really powerful. So thank you so much for listening. And I hope that in some way that this episode inspired you. I want to remind you that you absolutely can do harder things than you think. You really can. So find little ways to surprise yourself and push yourself, and then just discover the tremendous joy in the process. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you again soon. Thanks for joining me today. If you enjoyed listening to the High on Life podcast, please take a moment to subscribe, share, and review it on Apple Podcasts.